Batch a Batch. Night gathers, and now our podcast begins. It shall not end until we're done talking. We are
the princes that were promised.
And hello, welcome to the princes that were promised. It's me, it's Shawnee Wan. With me, as always, my colleague, my broadcast partner, the Keith Hernandez of A Song of Ice and Fire broadcasts. It's John. Just got done watching episode 4 called The Spoils of War. Before we get into the details, the specifics, John, your initial take on the episode.
I feel as if I'm in the minority. I was not in love with that episode, at least compared to what I've been reading and hearing. Even last week when leaks came out, all I heard was, this is the episode. This is the episode.
The HBO hack?
Yeah, the episode was leaked. The episode 7 script was fully leaked, I guess. And that lines up with the leak we had earlier on in the year.
Right.
Well, it's not as it happened. It was just a lot further detail.
These are different leakers, though, correct?
This is more like official.
These are better hackers than the guys at the beginning of the season. These guys are legit. I'll be honest, John, I woke up this morning pretty early. My stepson Frank got into our bed at like 5 a.m. and he was just like kicking and tossing and turning. I'm like, dude, I can't get back to sleep. So I woke up and I went on Twitter. I did a search for HBO hack, and sure enough, there was the link to episode 4. It's like 5:30 in the morning. I'm like, fuck it. I'm going to start watching it. So I started watching it. Frank came out of the room and oh my God, this isn't going to work. Just wait till later tonight. I was all gung-ho this morning, man. I was like, nice. It was really good quality, too. You could tell it was a screener copy. But you know what, man? It's not harming HBO. It's not hurting viewers. It's not hurting the mammoth machine that is Game of Thrones. It's still going to topple anything else that was on television tonight. That being said, do you think you would have enjoyed this episode more had you not had any spoils?
Even when I was watching it, I was watching it on some YouTube where it was like 3-minute scenes. And once again, it was out of order. So I was actually looking forward to actually watching it a little more cohesion, a little more, you know, what's actually happening in order. And there was a couple of scenes I didn't watch.
This is the shortest Game of Thrones episode in history. And it felt that way.
Yeah.
It definitely felt that way.
It definitely did.
It ended rather abruptly. To be honest with you, I don't like the way it ended.
Oh, Jimmy might die. Like, dude, like, he's not going to die like that. Like, it's not going to be...
For a few minutes, I thought Bronn was going to die, and I was actually a little bit disappointed that he didn't die. Not that I want to see Bronn die, but just, you know, the stakes have been increasing each week, and now we get the first skirmish with Daenerys on the back of Drogon, destroying Lannisters left and right, but Jaime gets out unscathed, you know.
Yeah, they're like, did Dickon die? Did Randall Tarly die?
Right. Well, I like that. I like the chaos of the battle. Let's put a pin in that. Do you want to go through scene by scene, and then we'll get to the end battle?
Yeah, that was the opening scene. I don't even know.
Well, it starts in Highgarden. So, The Spoils of War, it was written by Benioff and Weiss, directed by Matt Shakman, who is a first-time director for Game of Thrones. He's directing this episode, and he's directing episode 5. I thought it had some comedic moments, but they weren't light at all. The first thing I did notice, there were a lot of callbacks to season 1 in the Winterfell scene. But the first scene we had was in Highgarden with Jaime, Bronn, and the Tarleys. Jaime and Bronn have a little discussion about Bronn's payment.
What's interesting about that is that Bronn is still looking for payment.
Like, when is enough, you
know,
enough?
I think that's interesting. I don't know if he's going to turn on the Lannisters later on if he doesn't get paid.
You mentioned that, I think before the season started, you mentioned that to me. And we may have even talked about it on the air. Seeing the scene tonight, that was the first thing I thought of, was that conversation you brought up, the possibility of Bronn betraying the Lannisters. I still don't think so. It's more interesting now, more possible now, but I still don't think so.
Who's he going to betray to them? Man's King?
I mean, if he was going to betray them, he just saved Jaime from a dragon, from dragon fires. If anything, Bronn's character really developed this episode, I thought. Because here he is in the first scene complaining about getting a sack of gold and complaining about payment, asking for a bigger castle, when he did have a castle. He was married to Lollies, right? Lollies, what the hell is their last name?
Don't worry about it. It's not important. It's shiny dog.
Yeah. He had that castle, and Jaime promised him a bigger castle. And here he is asking for fucking Highgarden. And Jaime's like, Daenerys could be here any second on her dragon. You think you can defend this castle? And this Bronn would be way over his head in a castle like Highgarden.
Way too big for a guy like Bronn. By the first month, the trees be overflowing the castle walls. Right. Weeds.
I don't know. This scene was a weird scene to open the episode with. I'll come back to it later when we get to the last scene, but Randall Tarly, he's a Lannister man now. That guy takes no half measures. When he commits to something, he commits.
He's very stern.
Remind you a little bit of Tywin?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Maybe Jaime sees that.
Yeah, father figure-esque.
Yeah.
That he knows he can order him around. He couldn't order his father around.
Part of me feels like Jaime's a little bit intimidated by Randall Tarly. Especially seeing him in action and seeing him battle with Highgarden, his leal lord. We go to King's Landing for the second scene. Cersei and Mark Gatiss, the guy from the Iron Bank. I don't know if it's quite Pillman time.
Dude, you're completely missing the huge thing. You're completely missing one of the hugest things of the episodes.
Is it that they're offering her more money, or?
No, you're missing. You missed it.
What is it?
What have I been saying about Cersei? She is taking the role of who?
Aegon.
Yes, he said.
Oh, the Golden Company.
Sent out for the Golden Company.
Right.
I'm telling you, I deserve credit on that. She's going to get the Golden Company. The Golden Company will be introduced and they'll be backing Cersei.
Okay, this is a little bit of a problem for me because the Golden Company is...
Unless next year they bring in Fagin.
For six fucking episodes? My understanding, there are going to be, for the most part, six feature-length film episodes. So you're talking about an hour and 20 minutes at least. Maybe you could do it.
According to the episode 7 week, I really doubt it though. They are a fight for Cersei.
They would have done it already, man. That's too big of a thing to introduce. No, there's no Aegon, unfortunately. Maybe they can squeeze John Connington into it somehow. But it's problematic because the Golden Company was founded by Blackfyres. The whole purpose of the Golden Company is to return to Westeros.
Well, unless they're saying that Cersei and Jaime are bastard Targaryens then.
Right. It's interesting. I just feel like there's not enough episodes left. I've been saying that. Why not use a different sellswood company then? The Second Sons. No, that's what Daenerys was using, right? The Second Sons?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Windblown. Fucking whoever, dude. There's a billion sellswood companies over in Essos. Why use the Golden Company?
Maybe it's the name that they know that book readers would know. And
yeah, but book readers would use them. It's so closely associated with Blackfyre, with Maelys the Monstrous.
I know, but that's what they're doing, though. That's what they're doing. They're using the Golden Company.
It's interesting how they'll make it happen. At this point, I don't want to see another, quote-unquote, the Three-Eyed Raven. We can't talk about him being Brynden Rivers. He's just the Three-Eyed Raven. I don't want to see any more watered-down versions of things from the books just to include them.
Well, I think it's just going to be like another army. They're going to use it just as another army to give... Cersei.
Jesus. All right.
Patriots rebuilding.
Yeah, man.
Patriot rebuild.
You did talk about the Golden Company. You've been talking about them for a couple weeks now.
And the Iron Bank guy said, once again, we'll back you once we get paid in full.
No, I didn't think that he was going to get paid this episode. I thought...
Oh, no. I thought for certain that wasn't a count.
Right.
But that proved me wrong. At least according to Randall Tarly, it reached the gates.
Right. He said it went through the gates, right? Didn't he say it went through the gates of King's Landing? So a win for Cersei. I don't know if this dude's in next week's episode, this guy from the Iron Bank. The guy's name is Mark Gatiss. He's a Doctor Who writer. He's appeared in a lot of Doctor Who episodes. He's in Sherlock with Benedict Cumberbatch. He plays Mycroft Holmes. He's all over the place with his writing. He writes a lot of different television shows. I don't know how he got this gig in Game of Thrones, but when I saw him, I think it was back in season 3, I was really surprised that he got cast as that part. It works. He's doing a good job with it. What about you? You have anything else with the second scene there with Cersei?
All right. It's pretty basic there. Outside the Golden Company mention.
Yeah.
Pretty straightforward.
Here we get
the next. The Winterfell scene.
Oh, Winterfell. I liked a lot of this. I had some problems with other parts of it.
It's just so funny. Littlefinger has pretty much been like the big time creepo.
Right.
But within two episodes, I think Bran.
Oh, Bran totally out creeps him. And when Bran says chaos is a ladder, Littlefinger looks at him. He's like, man, I am creepy, but you, sir, are a fucking creepazoid.
And Littlefinger's trying to like swerve him. He's trying.
Oh, bro, he's trying to play. He's trying to play like the father role with Sansa and Bran.
I tried to help Kat, and that's what I'm doing now.
I failed her because I wasn't there. Like, and nobody, none of these guys believe him. They're just like looking at him, letting him bury himself. I almost kind of pity Littlefinger right now.
If this dagger, does it look familiar?
I feel like he has no play whatsoever, and he's just like throwing up Hail Marys now. He's actually given Bran the cat's paw dagger. what is he trying to do with that? He's just trying to get an in with any Stark he can. And I guess he figured Bran was going to be Lord Stark. I don't know.
And he's like, I'm not a Lord Stark.
Right. But what he said, chaos is a ladder. Littlefinger's like, what the
fuck? He's stunned.
Yeah. Oh, he's such a fucking weirdo, Bran. Although he was a little bit better this episode. A little bit.
And I want to talk about some of those little bits in a little bit.
All right. Well, how about, all right. So
those little bits in a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. We'll get to little bits in a little bit. Mira Reed comes in and interrupts them. I thought she did a good job. I forget the actress's name. But
all he says is, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. My brother died for you. Holder died. Summer died. That's all he'd say is, thank you.
Yeah. She's like, you don't need me anymore. He's like, you're right. I don't need you anymore. And she's like, all right, asshole.
I'll tell you. He's a telling.
He's like, I'm not Brandon Stark anymore.
You know, she's like, you did die. You did die in the cave. Now, can I bring up some little tinfoil? I'm going to bring up a little tinfoil theory.
Sure.
The three-eyed raven, right. As we see it, as we thought it was Blood Raven, the old man, three-eyed raven.
Right.
Does he warg into Bran before the Night's King kills him in that flashback? And that's why he's saying he's not Bran Stark.
Oh, hold up. Okay. In the last flashback, in season...
During Winterfell, and that's when they thought, like, when you see Hodor, young Hodor.
Okay.
And then, like, the Night's King kills the three-eyed raven in the flashback. Does he warg into Bran, who's warged into Hodor?
Oh, wow.
And takes on Bran's body. Because Bran was not in his body really at the time because he was warged into Hodor.
So Bran's in Hodor, so Bran's essentially dead. And Bran's been in Hodor this whole time.
Right.
Oh, God. This shit gives me a headache. And I love time travel, and I can keep up with any fucking plot, but this shit gives me a headache. All right, so... You know what, dude? It's totally feasible, and honestly... You telling me this right now, my only argument against it, I say this every season, I can't see any more Starks dying. You're going to tell me Bran Stark's not around anymore, so it's just Arya and Sansa? Those are the only Starks? I don't know if I can believe that. Although, it makes a lot of sense, man.
I'm not Bran Stark.
All right, but to what end, though? To what end? Any tinfoil theory, that's the question you got to ask yourself. To what end? He's better equipped to fight the Night's King?
Well, he didn't know because he wants to live on. He couldn't live on that body anymore.
No, he couldn't. And he seemed pretty calm. I'd have to watch that scene again. I feel like they would give something away if that was the case. They'd show Bran kind of being warged into. He'd have to react in some physical way, even though he was controlling Hodor. I don't know, man. That's a mess and a half. But you figure if Bran was in Hodor, he wouldn't have held the door, right? Mira would be like, hold the door. He'd be like, fuck you. No, because I'm Bran. Leave the cripple. Block the door with the cripple. Just put him in front of the door. Horrible, dude.
Mira Reed says she has to go back to her family. She's got to be with them when they come.
Right.
But did you think of anything of that? Like, you know.
Seems like they've come to the conclusion that the White Walkers are going to get through the wall.
Right.
It's a foregone conclusion for them. So they can see into the future? No, they can't. Because the future hasn't happened yet. They can see into the past. They can see the present if they know where to look. But I don't think they can see the future. Although, because the Weirwood tree, it's a seed, a sapling, and an adult tree all at the same time. It's more of like a four-dimensional life. So that's why they're able to use the Weirwood network to see what's going on. But I don't know that it looks into the future if that hasn't happened yet. I'm not sure. What was my point, though?
That they know the wall's going to come back, the White Walkers.
Yeah, I mean, even for Mira, like, it's a foregone conclusion that.
Or do you think that maybe she's got to go back and she's aware that, you know, like, what's going to happen, yada, yada, as you just said. Now that's going to be like the calling card for Halloween to make an appearance next season.
Very possible. But if they've drawn the conclusion, if they truly believe, the both of them, that the wall's coming down, or the White Walkers are just going to be able to get over the wall, through the wall, what kind of conversations did they have with Ed Tollett while they were at the wall? Why weren't we shown even one of these conversations?
Best answer I have?
Yes.
7 episodes of the season, not 10.
Okay.
That's the best answer we're going to have for the next couple of seasons, you know? Yeah. The last 2 years. They're steamrolling past things.
Yeah, they really are, man.
There's a bump in there. They don't even care. We're getting from point A to point B, and we're getting done with this. That's basically it, I think. You're getting done with this.
Look,
D&D, I think they're shot. They're tired. They want to move on. It's been a lot of years. They want to get this done with now. The tunnel's there, and they want to get that train 5 miles per hour faster just so they're sure they make it.
Fair enough. Listen, it's worked for the 3 episodes preceding this one. I just feel like this episode was a loosey-goosey with logic and reason. And then we get the Arya scene. Were you getting any goosebumps, John?
No, not at all. Just felt very weird. It felt very flat. I thought it was a little bit too long. I didn't get a payoff at all.
I actually very much enjoyed the scene. I think it may be my favorite of the episode.
What?
Part of it.
The reunion itself, like the moment, I didn't like.
It wasn't a feel-good moment.
I didn't like the stuff that they're already kind of like foreshadowing.
You got the callback, right? Arya and the two guards back to season 1 when she's trying to get into King's Landing. Remember that? When she's like, my father is the hand to the king.
Right.
And you're like, damn, fuck off. Whatever. And here, the same thing's happening to her.
Yeah, with only two guards, right? Right, yeah. You got it.
I thought that was pretty cool. And then we're in the crypts and we get a look at Ned's.
Got you.
Didn't really look like Ned. A little bit.
If you notice, when they hug, Sansa's kind of excited to see her. She hugs Arya, has more of a smile. Arya doesn't hug her back.
I thought she hugged her back. No, she didn't.
No, you don't see the arms. You don't see the arms.
No kidding.
That's 2 starts in a row. 2 reunions in a row that Sansa's not being hugged back.
They've all been on dark journeys, but Sansa's didn't need to be as bad as it was, and she kind of brought it on herself. So here's what I wanted to say about this scene, because I had the same feelings you did. A little bit flat, no emotional payoff. I thought this would be the second feel-good Stark reunion, would be Arya and Sansa.
I think at this point, the second one's going to end up being Jon and Bran.
Yeah, I think so.
Or whatever they want to call him, because I think Bran's going to be kind of excited because he has to speak to Jon. I'm skipping forward a little bit. I think Madge buys this when we talk about Bran in the next shot, but I just think Bran needs to speak to Jon, but in that regard, he's going to be excited to see him. This definitely, there was no excitement, really.
No, there wasn't, but what reason would there be?
Jon already wants to be huge.
And Sansa even makes note of that.
Right.
So the scene starts, Arya saying, do I have to call you Lady Stark? And Sansa says, yes.
She's already rolling her eyes like, oh, God.
She's joking. It's the same person. But is she joking?
No, she's not. No. She's already, but Sansa? Here's are you talking about Sansa joking or Arya joking?
I don't think either one of them was joking. You know, no, I think
it's both serious. Like, yeah, you have to call me Lady Stark. And that's Sansa being a Tully right there. Like, yeah, well, you know.
Okay, yes.
I'm your sister, you have to call me Lady Stark. And Arya's like, it's the same freaking goddamn bitch I knew when she was.
That's what I'm saying, dude. We got to go back to their relationship back in season 1. And they were always at each other's throats.
Right.
And there was very little compassion. And that relationship was, I don't know if it was competitive, but they were rivals. And I thought the acting here was awesome. And I thought the pacing of the scene was awesome. So I thought it was very well directed, very well acted. And you know, these two girls are best friends in real life, but here they seem like they're sisters, but they seem like strangers almost. And it's like the poor decisions that Sansa made all those years ago, or however much time has passed in Game of Thrones.
Arya still feels resentment. I think Arya still sees, she sees Arya and she sees Sansa just standing up there with the queen and Varys
right.
and Joffrey while her father gets beheaded.
And it's like neither one of them wanted to accept the other one at face value for 2 reasons. Both of them having spent nearly all their time they've ever spent together at each other's throats or on the defensive from one another. But the journeys they've been on, they've both grown accustomed to trusting nobody, learning they can only rely on themselves. So if they can't take each other at face value, if they can't trust each other, how will they have hope of ever trusting anyone ever again. Yeah, they had that difficult relationship, but they were kids. And now as adults, they're both Starks. They're both home. They both had difficult journeys. They both have a lot of enemies. They still don't trust one another. They want to, though. I think they both want to, and I think they both try to. They just don't. And I think the capper on this whole mistrust undercurrent was with the Bran scene. When Bran mentions Arya's list, Sansa realizes that Arya, when Arya said her list, Sansa thought she was kidding.
And
her
kid's sister. Arya laughed it off.
Right. So
when Bran mentions it, wait a minute.
So Sansa,
she wasn't lying. What kind of person is my sister?
Not just that. She says, who else is on your list?
That she's on the list.
She thinks she's on the list. Part of her does. The Littlefinger part of her maybe thinks, the Cersei part of her thinks that she's on the list. And Arya, I think, picked up on that too. And she said, they're mostly all dead. Don't worry about it.
Well, she was dead. Also, in the crypt scene, Arya's like, I heard that you killed Joffrey. I mean, she knows that Sansa didn't kill Joffrey, but she still asked the question. Almost kind of see maybe if she's lying.
Yo, why? Dude, there's so much mistrust there. It's a volatile relationship. It's no good. And they got to present a united front to guys like Littlefinger, because Littlefinger will pick up on that. And I'm sure that's what's going to happen, is Littlefinger will try to play off that.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you something else. If we go back to the beginning of the whole Arya sequence, when she's with the two guards, and she says, send for Maester Luwin, Sir Roderick, mm-hmm. or send for Jon Snow, then the King of North. He's 1,000 miles away. Lady Stark is in charge. And she says, which Lady Stark?
Right.
What the fuck is she talking about?
It made no sense to me. Which lady? Yeah, it made no sense to me. Which Lady Stark?
She knows Catelyn's dead. She's got to know Rob's wife is dead.
Not like Jon could get married and still be a Snow but call his wife Stark.
Right. So who the fuck is she talking about?
It's either one of two things. Just either clumsy writing that they didn't pick up on it, how like, or it's already meaning that Arya is like, okay, well, which lady, which Sansa are we talking about? Is it the same Sansa that I knew, or is it someone different? And like right away, if she asks the question, do I have to call you Lady Stark? And she's like, yeah. And it's like, Arya, like, yeah, this is the same Sansa. If you haven't seen Patrick in a long time, and all of a sudden you're like, Pat's like, do I have to call you Sir Sean? Like, right. Yeah, you gotta call me Sir Sean.
Yeah, you do. I'm the Lord of House Block.
You wouldn't be like that. No, dude,
definitely not.
So I think right away, like her, that first day, like she asked that question, I think that the answer by Sansa saying, yeah, you do have to call me Lady Stark, just that tellingness in her, like, yeah, like,
yeah.
She's already riveting in this role of leadership, you know, like, yeah, you have to call me Lady Stark. That answer just confirms any doubt that Arya has if, you know, Sansa's changed a bit. Like, nope, she hasn't.
She's still Sansa that I knew when I was a little kid. She's still Sansa that, you know, sold our father out to Cersei.
Mm-hmm.
If she even knows about that. I'm not even sure if Arya knows about that for sure. But listen, they've both grown up a lot, and they both have followed the paths set in front of them. It's not like they went out to find themselves. They both had to flee King's Landing in their own way and survive until they could get back to Winterfell, where they are now. They saw each other as kids, and they were always at each other's throats, and they really didn't like each other, had nothing in common, and now they're adults. Maybe they have a falling out. Not so much a falling out, maybe this comes to a head, this mistrust, but I think they'll be united by the end of things, or when they need to be, I think they'll be united. So the Bran scene, unless you got something else with them in the crypts.
No, I think that's it, I think. We touched on most of it.
So the Bran scene. I thought this was the best acting that Bran's done this season.
What did you notice the first thing? Bran hugs Arya. Didn't hug Sansa.
No.
Hugs Arya.
And Bran's, supposedly Bran sees and everything too. Right. So he knows what Sansa did to their father in King's Landing. I mean, she's a kid. She beats herself up for that too. She must.
Well, she should do the honorable thing and let herself be beheaded.
She should do honorary suicide, like the samurai of old.
The man who passes the sentence must pass. He must swing the sword. She has to kill herself.
Yeah. Everybody's just like standing around watching her try to cut her own head off. Do you have any last words, Sansa? No, I don't, Sansa.
Who would have known people like, oh my god, she's lost her mind.
Yeah. She's fucking crazy, man. She's trying to cut her own head off. John, thank god you're back. What the fuck's going on here? Why is my sister trying to cut her own head off? We don't know. All right, so Bran's playing around with this cat's paw dagger. And this scene reacts...
So emo. So emo.
Oh, my God, dude. So emo. But what is a cripple going to do with Valyrian steel? This scene, I felt, was a callback to when Catelyn, Rob, Theon, Sir Roderick were talking about the cat's paw dagger and the assassin in the Godswood back in season one. Because they're talking about essentially the same thing. Why would a hired assassin have Valyrian steel? They're having the same conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was another cool callback. And he gives the Valyrian steel to Arya. It's significant because it's the cat's paw dagger, but it's also, I think, maybe a little bit more significant because it's Valyrian steel and because of the battle that's coming.
Right, like this Bran sees something in the future that he knows that she needs, a Valyrian steel sword or right. Like a weapon. Another thing here with Sansa being the Tully that she is, she said it so fastly. The way she says it, she...
What about Littlefinger?
Yeah, she says it so fast.
Oh, because she's like...
Because she doesn't want to say it because she doesn't want... She knows that Bran probably knows.
With Arya's like, how did you get the dagger? He's like, Littlefinger gave it to me. And yeah, Arya's like, yeah, Littlefinger's here?
Yeah, Littlefinger's declared for House Stark.
Brushed it off.
Nonchalantly, like, just trying, like, maybe Bran didn't hear me or something.
And Arya's like, yeah, Littlefinger's declared for every fucking house, you idiot. That's his whole fucking thing. And Bran's like, yeah, declared for every house. I watched it. He did it. Sansa's still getting some use out of Littlefinger. She is. I think she still feels she needs him. She doesn't trust him. Definitely not. But at the same time, I think she identifies with Littlefinger more than she does with Arya and Bran, because her youth, how she grew up so fast, it was around people like Littlefinger. And to survive, you had to be like Littlefinger. To succeed, you had to be like Littlefinger. That's what she's used to. Arya and Bran, they don't know anything of that lifestyle. So it's unfortunate, but it's almost like Sansa is in a way closer to Littlefinger, and she trusts Littlefinger more because she knows she can trust Littlefinger to be Littlefinger and to be untrustworthy. That relationship seems like it's a lot more comfortable for Sansa, and I think she needs Littlefinger around in order to rule successfully, at least for the time being. I don't know if that makes her a heel so much as it makes her, maybe human in a way, but I don't know. It's kind of sad. So yeah, there was no emotional payoff. There was no goosebumps. There were no feels. It's kind of an awkward reunion with three kids who probably don't even remember what that time in their life was like because of the journey they've been on. It's kind of sad. What did you think of the Brienne Arya training scene? Because I thought it was problematic.
I don't want to sound so negative on it, so I didn't want to come out and say it, but I thought it was horrible. If this type of scene was not in there, it was something a little bit better. Mm-hmm. I think you really say it's a real, real good episode. I think you can point back to the Sansa Arya thing as a good plot line to follow and all that.
Right.
But this scene in itself just ruins it for me. You can't say it's a great episode because of this scene. I called on the chat before, of course, they're practical problems. There's a lot of practical problems in this episode, and this is one of the main ones.
Dude, okay, yeah. Let me do my issue, then you do your issue.
It might be the same one.
Yeah, it doesn't make any fucking sense because it's like they don't know Arya's character. They want her to be one thing, but they want her to be something else at the same time. So you're going to tell me she beats Brienne. Like, Brienne was fighting. She was fucking fighting. And she beats Brienne pretty much straight up. She was like Cereal Pharrell. Bro, where did she get those skills from? Because if I recall, the way fucking kicked her ass all last season.
All the time. Dude. All the time.
What it's the
like
fuck?
Even when the two guards were at Winterfell and the one guy went to grab her, also she's like ducking it out of the way. She's freaking goddamn Neo from Matrix.
Dude, and don't get me wrong. That's cool if that was the character that you were building. But you gave no indication of this being the person Arya would be. Yeah, Arya's a badass. Arya's a badass because she's brave. Because she's either so young that she's naive to the situation she's in. And I'm talking mostly about A Song of Ice and Fire, Arya. The character that everybody loves. She's a brave person when most other characters are not brave. And she gets through situations most other characters would not get through. Because she can look at things so logically, so reasonably, so matter-of-factly. Because she's a young kid. I don't know if she'll end up being the kind of fighter that Arya Season 7 Game of Thrones seems to be. But Arya in Game of Thrones didn't seem like she'd end up that character either. and there was no indication for it. The only training I ever saw her get was from Cyril Farrell in season one. How did she become a fighter like this? Because she wasn't, dude. First, she got fucking stabbed in the stomach. She was not this kind of fighter. Where did she become this kind of fighter? I like some of the things they do with the Arya character. I do. But I feel like they don't know what to do with the Arya character. I like that we had that scene with Ed Sheeran. Because honestly, I don't know if she went and killed them because they're Lannisters. There's no indication one way or another. So it's something you need to think about with that character. And I see a scene like tonight with Brienne, and I'm like, you know what? She probably did. Because that list really is important to her. It's her prayer. But dude, where the fuck did she learn to fight like this? It doesn't make any fucking sense.
I'm going to add a couple extra things to this.
Yeah, go right ahead, man.
When I was first watching it, thank God it wasn't Oathkeeper. Because then I'd really be tearing into it. But still, even if it's a practice sword, it still has to weigh a lot heavier than Needle.
Okay, yeah.
And it's being swung by a woman who's...
So you're talking the basic...
Three times the size of Arya Stark.
You're talking the basic physics of this whole scene.
Right.
And how it's right. Not possible for Thor. So now we go back into Arthur Dayne carrying two swords territory. Where a guy fighting with two swords can't beat a guy fighting with one sword. Because you don't have that kind of coordination. It's not physically possible. So now we have this scene where Arya is kicking Brienne's ass. It's not physically possible. I don't care who you are. Brienne's fucking huge. And she barely beat the Hound. And that's believable because they're similar size. Arya's not going to beat her, especially as easily as she did beat her. You want to tell me that Brienne was going easy on her? It sure the fuck didn't look like Brienne was going easy on her. At all. So yeah, bro, the physics of it doesn't work.
And then also, what was also very awkward was Arya's face. Like, she was like, had this creepy smile on her face.
Yeah, but like, she was just toying with Brienne. Like, where the fuck did this shit come from? Are you kidding me?
Very bad. And
really bad. Not only bad, but
danger.
Dangerous, dude. Dangerous to have this kind of fucking tomfoolery at this point in the show. Because now you're telling me that this... Dude, all right, so Arya could beat Jon Snow then.
Just put Arya in the front line. Give her a freaking...
Bro, she could take on all the White Walkers, it looks like.
Yeah, it was just horrible. Yep. Absolutely. The only good thing about the episode and that scene was when Arya and Littlefinger met eyes and they stared at each other. That was cool.
That was cool, but...
But it doesn't forgive the previous 3 minutes.
No, and dude, a scene like that then compiles on top of the other bullshit, which I didn't think was so serious, but now I look at it and I'm like... You know what? It is serious because all Benioff and Weiss seem concerned with is making sure Arya looks like a badass. It really sucks because we got really good, I'm not going to say character development, but we had a really good character-driven scene between her and her sister. No emotional payoff. It's still a good scene. And then you just kind of negate the whole thing by making sure we know she's a badass. We know she's a badass. We've known she was a badass since season one.
There's just no way
she could have killed.
That sword get overpowered so easily.
There's no way she could have killed Walder Frey and hid the carcass for a week and pretended to be. That couldn't happen. But I'm suspending my belief. Now you're going to do this bullshit. It's like, bro, what the fuck? Like, have you think about what you're writing? Think about what you're doing. And if you don't know, ask George. And if he doesn't know, ask Ilio. But fucking, we know she's a badass. You don't need to fucking force it down our throats. Really fucking disappointing, man. Really disappointing. Yeah, it's a cool fight scene. So the fuck what? How many fucking cool fight scenes have we seen on this show? We don't need a cool fight scene.
If they would have just showed her block off a couple of good defensive strokes and then have Brienne just taken down, okay.
Right.
Believe you wanted to show that Arya can fight up with
or when she woman. Or when
she still loses, you have to make sure that she wins. How is she winning that?
Or when she kicks her. Right? She kicks her with all her might. Maybe then she stays down. It's like, all right, cool. All right, so she's fast, but Brienne obviously was going to beat her because she's huge and has a bigger sword. But then she gets up and does like the Cyril. I was just thinking like she's just like Cyril Farrell.
Maybe and she's always going to get her ass kicked against Cyril Farrell also too. So it wasn't like...
Right. Like, where did she continue that training? The answer is she didn't. She learned how to be a faceless man and assassinate people with like poison. She fought the Waif, she was blind. Like, the fucking growth between season 6, episode 10, and that episode, in her fighting ability, it's not possible. Not possible. Bummer. So you can't give me not possible things in a fantasy drama, because I'm already letting my imagination stretch and accepting things that are not true in my reality. And you're going to throw bullshit like this. It's like, oh, come on. Are we serious? Like, I thought this was a realistic fantasy show. That's the whole hook. It's real. I got nothing else to say about this shit, man. It's just, it's, the more I talk about it, the angrier I get, because it betrays characters, is what it does. It spends so much time reiterating something we already know. It's like a fart joke. It's like the gratuitous sex. It's just, all right, well, it sells, or because Arya's a badass and people like that. Yeah, people love that. Season one, season two. We wanted to know what the fuck is going on with her now. We wanted that emotional payoff, and you're giving us like this Arya's a badass payoff. Like it's some kind of fucking drinking game or something. I don't know. What else you got with this scene?
It was just really bad. Just really bad.
And then you got her, the squire, you got fucking Podrick there, like looking on like, oh, wow, she's pretty good.
Yeah. Ooh, that's what I should be doing.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad for a little girl. All right, we go to Dragonstone for the fourth scene. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I'm calling that whole Winterfell block one scene. Okay, even though, yes. I mean, you could probably split up into two or three scenes. But we go back to Dragonstone? No, the first.
Yeah.
I thought we were already there this episode. This is the first.
Julio Dragonstone, then goes back. Then it goes to the Winterfell pod and Brienne, and then Brienne and Arya fighting, then back to Dragonstone.
Right, yeah, we skipped over the Dragonstone scene. Oh, well, because the end of that Winterfell scene, before they come back for the fight scene, the three Stark kids come walking out into the courtyard with Arya pushing Bran, Sansa walking next to them, and they seem like a united front. And you have Brienne watching on one side, Littlefinger watching on the other side, and different things going through both of their heads. And Brienne feeling like a failure because, yeah, they're together, but it wasn't because of her. Mm-hmm. Sansa's okay because of her. That one time she saved her, she couldn't help Arya. Arya didn't want her help. Littlefinger's got to be thinking, like, fuck, how am I going to play them off each other? How am I going to take advantage of this situation? But he'll figure something out. He'll see what's going on between Sansa and Arya. And I'm sure he'll try and take advantage of it. So then we go to Dragonstone. We get a little girl time gossip about Miss Sandy and Grey Worm.
Ugh.
That was a valid question. Like, what the fuck? Like, he's a eunuch. What's going
on?
Did you like Jon Snow bringing Daenerys to the Dragonglass and seeing the children's runes?
The markings. Yeah. I thought it was okay. I thought it was good.
Yeah, I thought it was okay, too.
It was a good way to show Jon that, you know, you have to fight together. This is what they did. They fought together against the White Walkers.
Yeah.
And maybe also those markings kind of show that, Danny, that the White Walkers do exist.
Yeah. A little heavy-handed. I mean, Jon could have, you know, for all she knows, Jon could have drawn them. But, you know, she just, that's what sells it for her. Weird that it's on Dragonstone. Well,
that's
maybe not.
That's where they got all the Dragonstone from, probably.
Yeah, all the Dragonglass.
So the first guy that the Dragonstone from was from Dragonstone. And then you can see kind of like they're trying to get chummy with each other. And then all of a sudden, like, Danny's like, I will fight for you when you bend the knee. Like, she's still all about having him bend the knee. They won't accept the Southern Ruler at all. Yeah. And he's contemplating it now.
Yeah, I told you. The only reason he would bend his knee, the only reason he's contemplating it, is because he knows he has to beat the White Walkers. And at this point, he'll do anything to beat the White Walkers. So it's not about pride for him. For him, what's right is making sure the realm survives. Yeah, good job by Jon. Good job by Daenerys, too. I think the writing was a little heavy-handed in this scene. It's okay, though.
When we hear the music, when you see kind of like that full shot of the cave there, it almost sounded like the
great music.
Jurassic Park, I think.
Oh, yeah, it did, didn't it? Yeah.
Almost, like, kicked into it. I'm like, bling.
Daenerys, welcome to the pile of Dragonglass under Dragonstone.
This is all we'll ever need.
So I don't know if this is proof of the Long Night and the Battle of the Dawn. I don't see how Dany takes it as such, but she does. I did like that the children had runes there, but I don't know. A little heavy-handed. But, again, only 7 episodes this season. And I think that's what the case is here. I think they needed to rush some plot points forward a little bit. And I think they used this episode for it. Right smack in the middle of everything. I will fight for you. I will fight for the North when you bend the knee. Tyrion and Varys show up and they're like, all right, so yeah, we took Castle of the Rock. Let me just open up by saying that. We took it. Very few casualties. And so now we have Castle of the Rock. And, you know, we got that. So that's good. All right, that's good, right? Like, yeah, but this happened also. You lost pretty much all of your allies, and the Unsullied are stuck out there with no food.
Yeah. Yeah, she's like, you know, She had a good line there. She had one of her best lines ever. She's like, you lost Dorne, you lost the Reach, you lost the Iron Islands, you know, all for your family. So maybe you don't want to hurt the rest of them. What'd she say?
Yeah, she implied that maybe you don't want to hurt your family. Maybe you don't want to kill your family. And he doesn't. It's just Cersei he wants to kill. He doesn't want to kill Jaime.
Did you catch when she starts like, gotta take control of this, no more games?
Right, I got dragons. No more clever games.
Yeah, did you catch what she said? Another hint of Nisa Nisa. 2 weeks in a row, hint of Nisa Nisa.
What did she say?
What kind of queen am I if I can't risk my life?
I wouldn't have taken that as a hint at Nisa Nisa, but there's something else that happened in this episode.
The next scene, there's another huge hint.
Well, there's something that happened this episode that makes me, if I bought into your theory that she is Nisa Nisa, and I don't know why I'm calling it your theory. I guess it is your theory because
it's been around a while. It's been around a time. My theory.
Well, I mean,
but it's my theory that theory about like the fact that yes, last week it was out there in clear blue. It seemed.
I'll tell you what. Last week, if I was a 20% believer in this theory, this week after this episode, I am a 45% to 50% believer in this theory. But before we get to that, Daenerys asks Jon what he would do. Because Tyrion says, you might get hurt, so don't bring your dragons to King's Landing. And Jon says,
that may people believe in you, and maybe they'll believe more in you than you do other things. But if you do this,
you're the same as everybody else. Cities,
if you burn people down, you're no better, you're no different than the status quo.
Very wise words by Jon Snow. Tyrion was like, nice, Jon Snow. It's like, I taught you well all those years ago. However, she does it anyway.
We'll get on to that. There's differences.
Well, I think that's pretty much... Well, no, we get another reunion.
Right. Another reunion before that, though, when Davos is talking with Jon.
So we're good on the practice yard. We got everything covered with the practice yard. Yeah. We just did the scene out of order. So then we go back to Dragonstone, and we have, Davos and Jon Snow approach Missandei.
What do you think of her? I said, what are you talking about? What do you think of her? Jon says she has a good heart. He mentions her heart again.
Oh, nice. Oh, very nice.
Did I get up to 55% now? Is up to 55?
Yeah, you're at 50. 52? You're at solid 50 right now. You're at solid 50 right now with that.
She has a good heart.
Yeah. Okay.
And they talk to Missandei, blah, 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 blah. Kind of like filler in there a little bit. And then they see the
Greyjoy ship. Jon's like, is that a fucking Greyjoy ship? Right there, that I see.
So I was a little underwhelmed by this. I was really, I don't know. I thought Jon was going to like punch Theon or something. I was a little underwhelmed.
Well, that's not Jon's style, though. He says to him, the only reason I'm not killing you right now is because of Sansa. Theon knew that would be his only saving grace, so he opened up. He's like, Jon, Sansa, is she all right? You saw Jon's anger. Keep in mind that Theon isn't the sole reason for Robb Stark's demise. Beginning of it. I mean, the beginning you blame on Catelyn. He helped usher it along. But it's Robb Stark's fault that he's dead, not Theon Greyjoy's. That being said, Theon did betray the Starks, betrayed Ned, betrayed Brandon and Rickon especially.
Right.
And I don't think Jon Snow's the kind of guy to hold on to that kind of anger for that long. So I was okay with this meeting. I actually rather enjoyed it. I thought Alfie Allen did a great job. Kit Harington did a great job. I thought it was a very well-acted scene. I liked it very much. Honestly, it was exactly what I thought it would be. What I'm more interested in seeing now with Jon Snow and Theon Greyjoy is how their relationship goes forward. I'm really interested in seeing that. So I was okay with it. I was going to ask the Queen if she could help me get my sister back. Queen's gone. Where did she go? What else do you have to say about that? It was a pretty short scene, this whole thing.
Yeah. Outside of the heart, she has a good heart. They're constantly pointing to a Jon and Danny. They're not even backing away from it.
No.
They're definitely setting this up.
Well, they got no time to be coy with this fucking shit, you know? Davos said something else. He said it wasn't really all that important, but he said, I like her heart. And Davos says, are you sure that's what you're looking at? Well, Davos was implying that Jon was kind of into her. Dude, Davos is a good fucking hand. I like Davos's hand.
He's a good don't mind if I change sides?
Yeah. Because he's real, because he's a commoner, you know? If you think about the hands that we got, Qyburn, Tyrion, Davos, they're all good hands. Even Qyburn's a really good hand, too. Some good hands in the realm right now, which I think was lacking in the War of the Five Kings. All right, you ready to tackle this battle scene?
Mm-hmm.
What do they call it? The Battle of the Supply Lines? The Battle of the Supply Lines. Rated R.
And there's some practical problems I have with this.
Oh, dude, there's...
I have a lot of practical problems with this.
Very, and you know what, dude? It's problematic for much the same reason that the Arya scene was problematic. The physics, first of all. The taking away of realism, which is a big selling factor of this show, is the realism. You take that away with this battle.
Can I come out and say it right away, please?
Go right ahead, man.
I know we get killed for this. I know the Bozos killed me for this. And I know there's dragons, people come back to life, and White Walkers, and this and that. But I draw the line to try to come up with, there is no way that a horse is going to be free and riding through feet of fire left and right of them. But, so not happening.
What you're implying is the horse is going to be scared to death of the fucking flames and the smell of burning flesh. But Jamie's horse has experience with dragons, so that's why. Yeah, so again, it's the physics and the physicalities and what is real and what can't happen. You establish this, it's a fantasy world, and there's dragons, so we're stretching our imagination. I said this before. You still need to establish rules. So I have a two-pronged approach to what I want to talk about. It's the narrative justice that I've talked about, and it's the realism that I've talked about. So there's a set of rules, even though it's a fantasy world, there's a set of rules, like a set of physical rules. When the apple fell on Newton's head, gravity, the laws of gravity apply to everybody. So you set up rules like that, even though it's a fantasy world, there are still parameters within which life exists. This battle negated most of those laws that had been established over the previous six seasons. Secondly, narrative justice. This is what really got me to start to buy into your theory of Daenerys as Nissa. Narrative justice. I've been talking about this a lot all season long, particularly with Cersei. But now I'm going to start talking about it with Daenerys. Jon Snow told her not to do this. Well, she's not going to the extreme.
I'm going to disagree. I'm disagreeing a little bit of that.
Let me make my point first, because these guys that she's burning, at best, they're Stafford Lannister's host that he raised up during the War of the Five Kings. They're what's left over from that, at best. But I don't think they fucking are, because the Lannisters were just about out of men to win the War of the Five Kings. So most likely, these are kids that are dragged out of Lannisport and the surrounding Western lands and told that they have to go fight for Queen Cersei, and they have to fight for Ser Jaime because Highgarden betrayed the queen. So they get dragged out and they get a march on Highgarden. Now a fucking dragon and Dothraki are running you down. These kids are going to run. They're not staying to fight. I don't care who their fucking battle commander is. They're going to run. That is reality. It's like with the horses. They're going to run. A dragon and Dothraki are coming at you. You're going to keep your shields up and look like how those actors looked? No fucking way, man. No way. No way. You're probably not going to refute that part of it. You're going to refute that Daenerys did not break narrative law, that she is not now in need of narrative justice being served upon her. And maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. As far as I'm concerned, she burnt, I'm not going to say innocent people, but I'm going to say she did what Tyrion and Jon Snow told her not to do. She did this episode. She got anxious. She got desperate. And I think she made a desperate move. And I think that narrative justice is going to come back on her. I think it was a bad decision to do this. And it's going to come back on her. And that's all about that.
I am going to disagree.
Okay.
Because when they were on Dragonstone, Dany said that she wanted to attack the Red Keep at King's Landing.
Right.
That's where both Tyrion and Jon said, you can't do that. You can't kill the innocent people. I'm going to disagree. I think you go a little bit too far and deep to what type of army, you know, whether it be kids or not. I think you go a little too deep with that, because as we know, the last army just, you know,
they disappear.
It's Game Genie,
right.
It's Game Genie. All of a sudden, we just lost 10,000 soldiers. Well, don't worry, we're gonna put this code in and we're gonna get 35,000
up, up, down, down, left, right, BA start. Yeah, with 30 guys.
So I think you're looking a little bit too deep with that. I think, in a way, Danny does listen to John. Because she took the fight on an open field and not at the city.
Okay.
Her initial thing was that she wanted to attack the Red Keep. If she didn't say that and she did it anyways, then you can't say, okay, she went against. But in a way, she did go against because she wanted to attack the Red Keep in King's Landing. She, in her eyes, the people that support Cersei are enemies. And then Jon said, no, if you do that, you're just as bad as the status quo. Then she took the fight to the army at the field. And let me know that wasn't a full Lannister army. That was just a small portion because a lot of the army has already been to King's Landing with the gold. Small host, which of course you had that, you know, your four major players, Jaime, Bronn, Randall, and Thick and Tarly, you know.
Listen, I love the visuals. It was exciting. That was my favorite part of it, though, was not knowing where Dickon ended up, not knowing where Randall Tarly ended up, like the confusion of it. That was my favorite part.
I got a feeling that they're dead, and like, next week we're just going to be like, all right, they didn't show that they're dead. I'm just like, yeah, they died. They got burned up by fire.
They're dead, but this is Lord Paxter Redwine. He's going to take over as Warden of the South.
He's gonna... and you know what? He's got 30,000 men coming.
This is Sir Edric Dayne. He's going to take over as... This is the Hightower. He's going to take over. So they just keep going down through all the southern lords.
But my biggest gripe, and this might just go back to Danny not trying to kill it, too many innocent people, or not trying to make too much of obstruction, but where were the other two dragons?
Why didn't she take them?
Right. I don't understand why she wanted to take them. A, it's her overconfidence. If she doesn't take it, they're overconfidence, because if she brings the two dragons, there's no way Bronn is able to get off that shot of the scorpion.
No.
They would have been flaking. And they would have, you know, had everything covered. So that's overcome. Okay, you can definitely make the argument that, you know, Danny didn't know that they would have a weapon like that.
Right.
But you have to go into a fight thinking, I'm going to war. Although I have this invincible weapon with me, this dragon, this invincible weapon.
I'm not following this whole scorpion thing because they're treating it like it's a brand new fucking weapon. This is a weapon that's been around since before Aegon's conquest. And that's that was the primary means of dragon defense. So it's not a new weapon. So how Daenerys and Tyrion didn't think that, hey, you know what? They do control King's Landing. They are in control of the realm. They just might have a scorpion. And then, what's a scorpion? Well, a scorpion's like a giant bow and arrow that can kill a dragon. What? No, they don't got that.
And of course, all that buildup and it didn't kill him.
No, it did wound him though. Okay, here's my other problem. I don't want to go super in-depth with this battle just because it's an instant review. When you look at it compared with the battle, I don't know what we're calling that battle, the Greyjoy versus Greyjoy battle at sea, which I thought was beautifully done. Whereas this one, it started off so great with Bronn hearing, you know, they're the big victory of the Highgarden, going to start messing around with Dickon, try and get him to loosen up a little bit, and then Bronn hears the horses. And I didn't realize that she was going to bring the Dothraki, I should have. But finally, we get the payoff, and it was a payoff. In season one, when whoever it was, Jorah talking about 100,000 Dothraki screamers running down on you in an open field, we finally get that visual. And it was actually filmed, edited, and produced much like Peter Jackson's Lord of the Ring battles, where the music cuts out right at the moment of impact, the violent epic battle. The Dothraki part was cool. And then when she shows up on Drogon and music kicks in, that was cool. The rest of the battle just kind of falls to shit. It lost its sense of realism, number one. Number two, they were trying to raise the stakes by not really raising the stakes. So Drogon got shot, but he's not really hurt. Daenerys almost got killed by Jaime, but she was never really in trouble. Jaime almost got blown up by fire, but he got saved at the last minute in like a probably another physically impossible scenario. He got saved at the last minute.
This is like all kind of stuff that maybe could have worked maybe back in seasons 2 and 3 and 4, but now it's...
Dude, I don't even think so. I don't think this is like shit that would work like if you like watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and like the dude jumps in at the last second, he jumps to the window and knocks you out of the way of the ray gun. I'm not okay with this. Don't want to see Bronn die. But the way you set that whole fucking battle up was for Bronn to die. When he loses his gold, that whole I'm like, he's dead. I'm like, oh my, like Bronn's going to die here. And that would have raised the stakes, which is what you did Episode 1 to Episode 2 to Episode 3, the stakes kept getting raised, which it should be. There's fucking 10 episodes left, not even. No, it's 9. There's 9 episodes left. So the stakes need to be raised every single episode. Bronn dies there, the stakes get raised. Jaime dies there, the stakes are really raised. But none of the above happens. It's like Jaime and Bronn are fucking bulletproof. And I began to think of this when they went to Dorne. I don't know why, but I was actually worried for Bronn's life, and he's fine. Now it makes me think that Bronn's bulletproof, but Bronn is not, he's funny, we like him, but he's not a good guy. He's a fucking sellsword. He does this for money. He doesn't care what side he fights for. He's a funny, down-to-earth guy, which is why you relate to him. But it goes back to the Tony Soprano, Walter White thing. You love those characters, and you're invested in these shows, and you love these shows about these characters, and you want them to succeed. But if you take a step back and you look at these characters, they're like the worst fucking people. They're the worst people. They're fucking psychopaths, sociopaths, horrible, evil heels. But because your look at them is so close, almost through their eyes, you identify with them and you like them. You enjoy their character. The same goes for Bronn. Same kind of goes for Cersei to some people. You cut them a break because you have such an inside look into their mind. I'm not saying Bronn should have died there. I'm saying that would have raised the stakes and it was set up that he was going to. Going back to the first scene when he's talking about getting paid.
Mm-hmm. And they get out of the castle, get out of the big castle.
And then he gets knocked off the horse and his bag of gold goes flying into the flames. So now, all right, so then it's character development and he doesn't care about gold anymore. And now he's going to fight the good fight. That betrays who Bronn is. That's what we like about Bronn. And people, ultimately, John, do not change. A little bit, here and there. Maybe they ease off, or they're a little more aggressive in some areas. But they, for the most part, they don't change. Bronn is not going to all of a sudden not care about money and put the Lannister cause first and foremost in his life. That's not what that was about. So he loses the money. It's in the flame, and he's looking at it. He's thinking about, can I go and grab that money before I go and continue to help Jaime? And I thought for a second there he was going to try to, and it was going to result in him being cut down. And I was like, you know what? That, while I don't want to see Bronn die, that would be good television. Which we did not get this episode. The closest we got, I think, was the Sansa and Arya scene in the crypts, their conversation. And I think that was the directing and the acting more so than the writing that made that scene work. So yeah, man, honestly, I'm lower on this episode having talked to you about it. What else do you got to say about this battle?
We'll talk more on Wednesday.
Yeah.
I don't want to go too crazy. I did like the Dothraki fighting. I liked their fighting style. I thought that was really good.
Yeah. It's like there's pieces of every scene that work really good, but then the rest of it just kind of drags it down. Mm-hmm. And what you're left with is a whole bunch of mediocre.
Tyrion just showing up, just walking, top of the hill. I know it was there, and we'll probably go a lot more into depth on this, and it's probably there to show Tyrion's compassion for the last army in a way, because like those are people probably grew up with, maybe.
Yeah.
It's definitely compassion. He doesn't want Jaime, you know, he's like,
no, of course
don't
not.
Do what you need. Don't do what you need.
Right.
He knows that Drogon's not, that he's going to, Drogon's is going to protect Dany there.
Right.
You know, it kind of got me a little bit, and I understand if he sees that it's Bronn. I know he likes Bronn and all, but if you're fighting for Dany, and you see this guy, who's got this weapon, it seems. Oh, maybe you don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't really know exactly what it is. But wouldn't you like tell like your guards up there, down there, get that. They're trying to shoot you. You know, they're trying to shoot you now.
Like, quick, motherfuckers, get on a horse and flank these guys, starting with the fucking scorpion.
Right.
Yeah.
I didn't like that at all. That he just like stood there and like...
Bro, Jorah Mormont would have killed Bronn. He wouldn't have gotten a shot off.
Oh, dude. He would have been screaming... Khaleesi.
He wouldn't have even killed fucking Bronn. He would have fucking went and tried to jump in front of the scorpion, take the arrow himself. His fucking body just tears apart.
Khaleesi.
Okay, here's just.
I didn't like that. And I know it sounds dopey and it sounds stupid, and people say, "Well, it was Bronn." But if you're pledging your knee to someone, mm-hmm. then friendships go out. You knew what you were doing when you went on that side.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to say that Tyrion is a spy or anything like that.
No, he's not. He cares about Jaime. And I doubt he thought that it would come to this. Or maybe he did, but he didn't really picture it in his mind. But here it is. Why is she fucking bringing Tyrion there? Especially if she's just laying into him for his whole strategy being a failure. Why is she bringing Tyrion to this battle that his brother's going to be at? Number one. Number two, where is the scouting? Where are they getting this information that that's where they are?
Right.
Number three, how is she getting there at the same time as the Dothraki if she's flying on a dragon? Number four, where the fuck is Tyrion coming from? Like, did they take a boat? Did they take a fucking car? Like, did they get there before, just chilling on the hill waiting? Issues, bro. Issues. And don't even get me started on Jaime's run at the fucking... Dude, when I saw that in the trailer, Jaime grabbing the spear and running with the flames around him, I'm like, that's fucking sick. That's sick. Dude, that wasn't sick. There was nothing cool about that.
It was so funny. And again, maybe Jaime is Azor Ahai, but a lot of people, they saw that and they're like, oh, you see this? He's going up against a dragon. This is them showing his affinity with the dragons. You know, he's going to take on, he's been called the Dragon Slayer now. He's going to kill a dragon. And then you see it, and it's like, you knew he wasn't going to get the Dany.
No,
you
dude.
Knew it. Like,
dude, you know, look. You knew he wasn't going to get Dany. You knew Bronn was going to get Drogon. and you knew that they weren't going to get him. Like, you knew none of them were going to die. Bronn, though, I like Bronn, but honestly, dude, he should have been dead meat in this episode. That should have been it for Bronn. Because his storyline has already come and gone. This is just all bonus stuff for that character. If you're going to raise stakes, if you're going to make this battle mean something, which right now doesn't fucking mean anything, because no principal character or any minor character or anybody whose name I knew were in danger. I'm sure Randall Tarly and Dickon Tarly are fucking fine. That battle was fucking bullshit. It looked great. Looked fantastic. I was excited as I watched it. But by the end, I was like, this is some bullshit. And then cut the credits as though Jaime's going to drown. Okay. Jaime's going to drown.
Well,
why don't you just have blasted by fire?
Get to him real quick, because Tedley, he should be drowning because he's got that gold hand on. He's going to drown the bomb. Dude,
yeah. I mean, he's going to have to shed his armor and get rid of his hand. And for a moment, I thought that was Dickon. And I'm like, all right, well, maybe Dickon will drown. And at least that'll be something. But now it's Bronn, and Bronn will be fine. And he'll get up and joke about it. And they'll go back to King's Landing. And they'll be like, well, they got Dragon Cersei. And then they'll just fucking do some planning for another episode. Listen, you set a pace and you open the season brilliantly. You didn't do three flawless episodes, but you did three episodes almost on par with The Winds of Winter, almost on par with The Battle of the Bastards, almost on par with Hard Home. Almost. Nearly there. And that's okay, because it's the first three episodes. It's setting everything up. So then the payoff, I would assume, is going to exceed those episodes. But you throw a dudder in like this, and it's like, did you just like write this in a couple days? You usually write 10 episodes a season. I kind of want to watch it again, because I know I won't like it better. Maybe I'll dislike it more, but I just want to be sure that it was as insulting and juvenile as I thought the writing was, hearing it the first time. That's really all I got, man. Like I said, I don't want to go too in deep, because you know we're gonna meet up again and talk more in depth. But honestly, dude, the money poured into it, performance by Sophie Turner and Maisie Williams, I don't want to go below 6. Right now, I'm going to go 6.25.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm going to 6.25. And you know what? I think I was like a 7.5 when our conversation started tonight. And just talking about it, it made me really angry at Benioff and Weiss for doing that this late in the game. It was like watching The Prince of Winterfell from season 2, which was the worst episode up to that point, if it had the Battle of the Blackwater at the end, except the Battle of the Blackwater was just characters we didn't know. I don't even know if that fucking makes sense, but there was some trickery, some fucking tomfoolery by Benioff and Weiss tonight, and I'm very, very disappointed in both of them. Bad job, guys. You gonna start acting like George Martin now?
Oh, by the way, just on Saturday, he says on a Facebook post, I've been doing a lot of side projects lately, but FYI, this isn't one of them. It was about some sort of like video game thing. A lot of side projects. Thank you, George. What about your main project?
And then he's like 2018. Anyway, we'll get two books in 2018. Yeah, okay. We'll get two books in 2018. Fuck. You can all of a sudden double your production. You get three. Just give us a Dream of Spring also. We'll get three books in 2018. Nobody believes you. Watch the Jets. Why don't you give me an in-depth analysis of the Jets draft and then give me an in-depth review of their fucking week one loss to Kansas City Chiefs or whoever the fuck they lose to. Get out of here, man. Get your priorities straight, bro. If he had written this book, we wouldn't get an episode like this. It's so late in the game for an episode like this, it makes me worried for the rest of the season. It's just one episode, and maybe it's not as bad as I'm making it out to be. I'm going to have to watch it again, but for now, 6.25. We'll see what a repeat viewing does. What do you got, bud?
As much as my quirks I have about this episode, I'm definitely not at a 6.25.
Okay.
I'm going to say, I'm debating. I'm going to say 7.75.
Oh, wow. All
right. So it was a good episode, but I don't think it's as good as everyone's saying it is. I've seen someone say, like, you know.
It's definitely not as good as
everyone's saying it is. The Brienne Arya thing was, like, the best part of the whole entire, like what?
I'm sorry, you said 7.75?
Yeah.
I want to give it a score like that. You know what, maybe I'll watch it again, and I do, but the lack of stakes being raised, 7 episodes, bro, these all have to be knockouts. How do you have filler at this point in time? And it almost felt like filler. What's different from the end of Queen's Justice to the beginning of The Blood of the Dragon? What's different? Arya's at Winterfell, but nothing's different. Dany attacked the Lannisters with the dragons, but like you said, that's not even the biggest part of their army. Nothing's different. Nothing's different. Whatever. I'm probably being too hard on it. You got anything else you wanna say, my friend?
I'm just debating right now if I should make replies to some of these people, because I'm just not sure if it's worth it. On Twitter. Interesting point about next week's episode I want to add.
We thought it was called Death of a Queen?
No, it was so like, thank God it wasn't.
Oh, God, yeah.
First person to leak this out, like, yeah, there's two sides saying it's called Death of the Queen. And I'm like,
what?
There's no queen that's going to die in episode 5.
Right.
So Dany's not dying. Sansa's not dying.
If there was, they wouldn't put it in the name of the episode.
Exactly.
It'd be like calling Baylor, like, Death of the Hand. The beheading of the hand. And you're like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen in this episode.
This is an episode 1 of the Phantom Menace when they put the CD out there, put Qui-Gon's noble end.
Oh my God, dude, yeah. And then you get like the fanboys like crying about Qui-Gon dying before the movie even comes out. You got to wonder sometimes like where things like this go wrong. Where does it lose touch with common sense? What is that line that Benioff and Weiss crossed? Where was it where they're like, all right, well, this is going to be a dope episode, man. They're going to love it. The dragon. So many cool fucking visuals from the trailers, from the marketing photos, came from this episode. And it's a stinker, man. It's a stinker. It's stinking up my house right now. I got to go open the windows and air it out. All right, guys. Appreciate you listening to us. You can find us, thepromiseprinces.actionpackpodcasts.com, facebook.com/thepromiseprinces. You can follow us on Twitter and tweet at us and communicate with us at Princes Promised. You could read our writings, and you can also follow our RSS feed at theprincesthatwerepromised.wordpress.com. You can also find us on Tumblr, and we're going to have a YouTube up pretty soon. I think definitely before the end of Season 7. Hopefully we'll get a couple videos up for Season 7, but we're working hard on that. If you can, we would very much appreciate it if you could leave a review for us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts from. It's the only way for us to grow, only way for new listeners to hear us, only way for us to be heard by new listeners is reviews. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, it's the only way that they start to market us, that they start to suggest our show. Take you 2 minutes. You could leave something as silly as, this is a great show, or something as complex as, you know, an in-depth review of how John and I review Game of Thrones episodes. Whatever it is. But if you can do that, it would be most appreciated. John, always a pleasure. We will talk with you guys with our more in-depth analysis of the spoilers of War later this week. Bum, 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 bum